Special Committee on Perimeter Stabilization. We are here today to discuss the 8-A2 amendments to Senate Bill 1028. I assume those have been distributed and everyone in the audience has seen them and we're prepared to comment on that version of the bill, not the version of the bill that was on the Senate floor yesterday. That one is deleted by the A2s. With that, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1022. The A2 version. And we'll start with David Hendricks to come up from Legislative Council and go through the amendment briefly and so everyone knows exactly what we're doing here.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Senior Deputy Legislative Council. The Dash A2 amendments are a complete replacement of what is in the bill. The first two sections, which are denominated successor retirement plan, and people can argue about what a successor retirement plan. The idea is that this would be a third-tier plan for new hires after January 1st, 2004, and which means that existing members of the system on December 31st, 2003, would remain underneath PERS. So this is much different than the original bill, which took active members of PERS and said, you no longer will be in PERS, you will be inactive, and there will be a new system covering you. This is a third tier. It's basically a new plan for new hires. It is based on the bill that the House considered during the third special session, essentially the same plan. The provisions of subsection 2 basically spell out who it is that can meet the qualification to be underneath the existing system. It's taken directly from the second tier law that was passed in 1995, in which now appears at 238.430. So it's exactly the same standards that we use for shifting from first tier to second tier. It's a fairly liberal rule with respect to being able to establish that you were a member. There are a lot of ways in which it allows a person to say, I did some work before the magic date of January 4th, 2004, and I should be able to qualify to be underneath the old system rather than the new system that's subsequently adopted. Section 3 basically indicates to the 72nd Legislative Assembly that they will need to adopt a plan for those people hired after January 1st, 2004. And I've had some suggestions for some clear language to make it clear that this was intended to be for new hires, and that would be easy to do if that's a problem. Section 4 relates to what's commonly referred to as the 8% guarantee. This is actually a guarantee that Tier 1 members will receive at least the assumed interest rate credited to their account each year. The assumed interest rate is a rate that's set by the board for not just for the purposes of this statute, but for the purposes of all of their assumptions that they use relative to how much money they need to fund benefits. So, for instance, when they look at how much money they need to have in the reserve they have set up to pay retirees, they assume that the money in there is going to earn 8%, and they fund it accordingly. So it's a rate that's used for a huge number of things within the system. The law that was passed back in 1973 said you shall pay members on their accounts that they'll be credited with at least the assumed interest rate, and it is, as I said, it's currently 8%. And over the years, that's gone from, I don't know, I think it's been as low as, well, down 2% or something at the beginning, and it's gone up, crept up over the years, as it has most other states that have looked at it. This is an issue in every pension system about how much do you assume the money is worth, and they review it on a regular basis and change it from time to time. What this change will do...
Representative, excuse me.
Well, go ahead. Maybe you're about to answer my question.
Yeah, what the change we've made here is this. Currently, the members are guaranteed that they will get 8% on their accounts. And as you all know, there's a huge deficit right now in the fund attributable to that guarantee. We've had 2 years of negative earnings on the fund, during which the board had to credit the accounts with Tier 1 accounts with 8% in earnings, even though the fund actually lost money. What that left was is a big negative number, and much of that $8 billion, $8.5 billion in unfunded liability that you hear about is attributable to those 2 years, and it's very possible, if not probable, we'll have a third year coming up with a similar situation. And what this language does is says basically, look, for the time, for at least under this statute, the way this subsection 2 is that not only will we pay you, guarantee you 8%, but we're not going to pay you more than 8% on those accounts, that all the remaining interest above and beyond is going to go to retire the deficit and to reestablish the reserve. And I talked with Steve Delaney, who only had a short time of PERS, who only had a short time to look at this draft, and we may want to tweak that language a little bit to make it sure about reestablishing the reserve, which is the other piece of this. Pay off the deficit and reestablish the reserve in such amount, the amount. So, and this is basically just says anything over 8% will be paid into these other reserves, and that no amount will be going to the member beyond that. That's just, what this does.
Just so I'm clear, thank you. So this is for Tier 1 employees. Say it was a year like 97 and we had a 22%, the market did 22% or 21%. This says for those employees, they would get 8, and then the remaining, the difference between 21 and 8, would be credited to the reserve fund to pay, basically, to help balance.
Chair Byer, Senator Decker, that's correct. The anticipation right now is that... from what I've seen on projections from PERS on various assumptions is that we will have to have a very remarkable market turnaround before the deficit we currently have could be paid off. I have some question about, you know, even if you didn't change this, I don't know if you'd ever have a year when more than 8% would be paid out with the Tier 1 members anyway. Steve Delaney of PERS can tell you more about this. The problem they face is the fact that Tier 1 membership is collapsing. That you have to have had some service before 1996 in order to be Tier 1. And we're now 6 years down the line, and as each year goes by, there's a smaller and smaller group of people who are in Tier 1 and who have membership accounts under Tier 1. So the fear is that unless the market turns around pretty quick, that even if you get up to where you're earning 20 or 24 or some of these numbers we've had in the past, that the amount of money you're dealing with isn't big enough to do the offset against the deficit that's already been established. So I don't know. You can ask Steve about that, but there's some question at this point, you know, if there would ever be enough earnings on Tier 1 accounts, even unless you had some really, really remarkable market returns. Section 6 is the legislator's retirement plan. This is very similar to the bill that's been printed this session. I think it was Senate Bill 1030. It was one of the three bills that were introduced a couple of days ago. And in essence, the principal difference here is that this bill will directs the Legislative Administrative Committee to create the plan. The bill that was introduced basically directed them to prepare legislation for submission. This tells them to go ahead and prepare the plan. It also makes a clear statement as to what the plan will be. It indicates that it will be a defined contribution plan. and provide for fixed employer contribution of 7% of the legislator's salary and a fixed employee contribution of 7%. And then the next sentence indicates that you cannot have a pickup or assumption of payment of the employee contribution. So those are fixed in the statute as far as what the plan must look like. Beyond that, it has some general statements about the nature of the plan. Section 8 is the provision that would basically decide which, you know, when this kicked in for legislators, and in essence, a legislator is protected for the balance of their term, after which they would be underneath the new plan adopted by the Legislative Administration Committee. So that would mean that for senators, for instance, there would be perhaps up to 4 years underneath the PERS system before, if they were reelected in the next term, they would then be underneath the new system. For House members, 2 years before before this was implemented for the different retirement system. Section 9 is the expedited review. I've talked to the chair briefly. This is currently limited to Section 8, which is the legislator provision. It could be expanded to cover the other sections of the bill as far as expedited review is concerned. The reason I didn't do it in the original draft was because, I don't know of a good challenge for a three-tier plan. That I think it's fairly clear that if you're just doing a three-tier plan and saying we're only going to affect future hires, that there isn't a challenge. And so an expedited review provision, if there's a good argument for one, then you could go ahead and cover it and it wouldn't hurt. I'm just saying I don't know what the challenge would be. And on Section 4, as I've just mentioned, I think it will be many, many years under Section 4 before anybody will be harmed by this provision, simply because it's going to be many, many years before anything above 8% probably was going to be paid to members anyway, and only under some fairly unusual circumstances. Section 10 is a retirement plan for the governor, which is very similar to the provisions that I just explained for legislators. It will provide for any person who becomes governor and takes office after July 1st, 2003, which means that the governor winning in the next election would not be subject to this provision, at least for the first term. And in subsequent terms, that governor would then be underneath the new plan adopted by the Department of Administrative Services. It has the same provisions as the legislative plan relating to employer and employee contributions and the pickup. And that's about it. Section 13 is just a conforming amendment, and then there's an emergency clause on the bill.
Thank you, David. Any questions at this time? David will be here if questions are raised by some of the other testimony. We'll have him come back up at the end to answer them. Okay? Thank you. Oh, where do we want to start? Do we have the group wants to come up together? I understand, or is that, I saw you grab three chairs. Is that you? Do you want? Okay. Who wants a Michelle? Mike? Did I do it wrong?
No. They're just pointing at each other.
Oh.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. I just want to say that we appreciate the amendments that the committee has put forward and your continued attention to this issue. This bill, with some clarifications, some of which Mr. Hendricks discussed and some others that I will outline, we think can provide cost containment on a going-forward basis for employers and some certainty for existing employees as well, both of which are important to us as public employers. Some clarifications that might be helpful. For instance, what Mr. Hendricks stated in terms of Section 3, we would suggest adding language to make it explicit that the successor system applies to those who have not established membership in the system by January 1st, 2004. And also the call, the, I beg your pardon, also the expedited review portion of the bill. While it's true, it may be a while before anyone is harmed and therefore might make a challenge, I think in our view it might be helpful to apply it to the entire bill so that we would have some resolution of that issue sooner rather than later, any issue that might be litigated. So we appreciate your continued attention to the bill, and with those clarifications, this is a bill that we at the League of Oregon Cities as public employers would support.
Thank you. Marge.
Good afternoon. I'm Marge Kafoury, Director of Government Relations for the City of Portland, and I would like to echo what Ms. Deister has said. I want to thank the committee for pursuing this matter. It's a matter of great urgency to both you and to public employers everywhere to bring some certainty and some surety into this system and to potentially reduce costs over time. With the changes that Ms. Deister has outlined, the City of Portland supports these amendments and would like to see them go forward. With me is Steve Manton, who is a pension systems manager and financial planner for the City of Portland. He has one further issue that he would like to bring to your attention for consideration by this committee.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, one thing we would like to see is on Section 4.
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steve Manton, City of Portland. One other thing we would like to bring up to the committee's attention is line 20 through 22. The sentence that states, a reserve account so established may not
what page?
Be, I'm sorry, on section 4,
page.
Line 20, page 2.
Gotcha.
A reserve account so established may not be maintained on a deficit basis for a period of more than 5 years. We would like to see if you could change that to a period of 10 years. That would give the fund the opportunity to have interest earnings that may get us out of the large hole that's been created by the deficit reserve that's currently in place at this time, which is about $2.5 billion. We think that all employers would have a very hard time meeting that call if it came within 5 years. So we'd appreciate your attention to that particular issue also. Thank you.
We will ask the PERS representative in a little bit what that does to the plan and if there's any potential pitfalls on extending that timeline. Yes, Senator Deggert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. First, have y'all been a part of the Speaker's Task Force or the Governor's Task Force?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Deggert, the League of Oregon Cities does have representation on the Governor's Task Force in the form of Mayor Hellenberg from Corvallis, and we have on the Speaker's Task Force, we're a member of the work group as well.
So one of the issues that came up in the first public hearing we had on this, and I thought it was a legitimate point, is that we have a couple task force, and these amendments I think we got within the last couple hours. We have had task force that are working pretty diligently to produce a product for the upcoming legislative session, and you guys are part of those task force. What part of that effort would you like to see suspended in favor of doing something in the fifth special session as we try to get a budget negotiated?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, I don't necessarily feel that these efforts are mutually exclusive. I think that the task forces will have an opportunity to really shape what kinds of recommendations are going to be considered by the 2003 legislature.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Libby, do you want to say something also?
I have written testimony. I can speak to it or just give you this. We support the bill.
Okay, that's fine. Brian?
Tag team again.
I'm going to go first.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman,
members of the committee. My name is Pat West, representing the Oregon State Firefighters and also the Public Employee Coalition. If I could, I'd like to go through our reading of the bill and some of the impacts that it has so that you'll understand the impact that it has on the members. It won't take long, but I'm going to deal with the issues pertaining to the 8% guarantee mainly. You heard testimony from LLC that described, you know, that the 8% would be 8%, no more, no less, in effect. I think it's important for you to understand that the monies that go into the reserves account have all been employee monies to this date that funded the employee 8% guarantee, which means that over the years, they've taken more money from the employees and taken it off the top and put it into reserve account. And when they earned less than 8%, they then gave that money back to the employees. Until last year, the employers have not had to pay any money for reserve accounts. That has not happened. As of last year, for the first time, they went into what they call deficit account. That's what the reference was made to earlier about deficit account. The deficit account, it says here, shall be established for 5 years, meaning that they can be in deficit for 5 years, hoping that the employee money earns more than 8% so that they can take employee money to pay the guarantee to the employees. That's how it functions. It's employee money that's paid for all of it up to date for the 8% guarantee, and it will be employee money that goes back into the reserve to pay the deficit account to pay the deficit, meaning that employers don't have to pay anything for up to 5 years. If it goes beyond five, then employers would have to pay for the guarantee. So I just wanted you to understand that the 8% guarantee that everybody has made reference to date has not cost the employers any money. If you extend it to 10 years, then you're obviously opening a window that says, okay, the risk to employers is going to be less, meaning the employees are going to pay again for any additional 5 years into the deficit account before they pay the reserve account, before they get any monies above 8%, if prior to this change. So I just wanted to kind of explain how the mechanics of that has functioned. The second part, I think it's more devastating, is the last sentence on Section 4. Again, we have to understand that Tier 1 is a closed system, meaning that 25 to 30 years down the road, all the employees will retire out, and the system will, Tier 1 will not exist anymore. The account, reserve account, was set up so that when Tier 1 phases out in 25 or 30 years, that reserve is supposed to zero out at the end, meaning that it's supposed to, they're supposed to keep it as close to what they need in reserve so that when the system goes away, those reserves would in fact zero out. So when you take this language out, what you're in fact doing is allowing the reserves to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually the system will terminate, and what happens to those reserves? Who gets them? But it came from the employees' money because they've been held down to the 8% only. Then the final thing, I understand that short term, and that's unfortunately some of the projections that we've been seeing over the next 5 to 7 years, there's some projections for problems with the funding. But once the amount of retirees reduces and it starts leveling out on the Tier 1, the projections change. So it's not always going to be that we're in such a projected financial problem. And the last thing is that the system, the fixed account, has earned over 10% on average. since the inception of the program. So, in effect, when you're limiting it to 8%, you're taking 2% away from employees over time. So anyway, that pretty much my description of what I see happens with the 8% guaranteed portion.
So, okay, anything else?
Well, I have some testimony.
Are you done, Pat?
I am, yes.
Okay, Brian.
For the record, I'm Brian DeLeishmet. I'm still Brian DeLeishmet, representing the Oregon Council of Police Association, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers, along with the PERS Coalition. Pat went through some of the problems that we have with the bill. Not to spend a lot of time on rehashing my testimony from before, but we still have some of the same problems with this bill. We understand the dynamics of what it does and who it impacts is different, but we still have some problems. It ends the system without having something else in place, and we think that is not just unfortunate, but a situation that will, again, create retention and recruitment problems. Excuse me, not retention problems, but recruitment problems. You will not have a system in place, and there is no guarantee that there would be a system in place. There is, of course, the incentive for, quote-unquote, all parties to come to the table in the next legislative session to agree on some kind of a plan. But there is no guarantee that there would be a plan in place, and I think that's very unfortunate. I think in a situation where you're going to try and bring new employees in, that doesn't help you with recruitment. I guess I get a little tired of the same message, but I don't want to lose this message. What we're really talking about with, quote-unquote, the unfunded liability and the problems with PERS is Tier 1. We fail to recognize that we have Tier 2, and Tier 2 does not have an 8% guarantee in it. There are a lot of things that were done in Tier 2 that are things that people are talking about now as problems with the PERS system that have already been resolved. So until I think the governor's group and the speaker's group have been able to go all the way through their working process, be able to delineate what are the problems with Tier 1, what can be solved with Tier 1 legally, what are the problems, or are there no problems with Tier 2, what can be changed with that, I think this cliff of creating a Tier 3 is premature. I do understand people want to force the issue, but I think sometimes you may get a little ahead of yourself, and I think the discussions with the two panels that are going on right now is the appropriate place to have those discussions, the fact-finding, and move forward. I, too, have the same problem that Mr. West has with Section 4, and he described the ending balance on the gain-loss reserve. We've had these discussions both with the PERS board, and we had these discussions with you as a legislature last session about what money is in that gain-loss reserve when the last Tier 1 employee walks out the door. Well, you are deleting language in here that attempts to have a zero balance in the gain-loss reserve when the last Tier 1 employee walks out the door. And those are dollars that were captured from the employee's earnings that were not credited to their accounts. And we have a very large problem with that. With that, I'll end my testimony. I didn't want the opportunity to get by that anyone in this panel of legislators or in the room felt that we were okay with this version versus the other version. We still have a major problem with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks a lot. Maria?
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Keltner, and today I'm representing the League, Association of Oregon Counties. The association appreciates the work that's been done to try to deal with the problems and issues that have arisen and have come to everyone's attention concerning PERS. There are several things that the Association of Oregon Counties is looking for in terms of PERS reform. One of the things in this amended bill that is supported by the Association of Oregon Counties is the need for a successor system for new members or people that are not yet members of the system, whatever the correct terminology is. They also support the need for a cap on crediting earnings to Tier 1 regular accounts. There is a concern, but I believe it's been spoken to and is going to be perhaps amended into this, about the need for expedited appeal to the Oregon Supreme Court, particularly on the issue of the crediting of earnings change. It would be helpful also to have the change that was mentioned in Section 3 on page 2, clarifying that the successor retirement plan, the 2003 legislative session, would be adopting would be for those establishing membership in the future. And the fourth point that they are looking for and that is needed is a funding source to help local governments with the unfunded actuarial liability from the problems of PERS that continue to exist, that have been created in the past, and that continue to exist with Tier 1 and Tier 2. Thank you very much for your work and for your continued endeavors to assist with this major financial problem that creates a lot of tension for everybody, no matter what side of the table they're on.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thanks. Okay, I don't have anybody else signed up. Is there anybody else who didn't get a chance to sign up? Steve, I've got you. I want to bring you up last. Joe, come up, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhart with Associated Oregon Industries. I'm not here to tell you that this bill solves all the problems, but it certainly gets everybody off center. I would like to see the bill move forward. I think the taxpayers are watching you this fifth session. They're looking at you considering tax increases. They'd also like to see you consider reforming PERS because that is one of the costs that is facing government at this time, one of the biggest holes they face, and we think it should be part of any package that comes out of here. And we would like to see more consideration for those issues that are costing the state money, not just raising taxes. And for that end, I would like to say that this bill, you've heard people come up and say they're for and against it. I'm not going to sit here and say it's a perfect bill, but it does get us moving. And we think there are certain provisions of this bill that are excellent. And we'd like to see you move forward with it. And be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks a lot. Oh, sorry, Senator Deckard.
Thank you. So just one, and it's kind of a process question. You've been around this building a long time or a decent amount of time, and you kind of have a feel for when we have complex problems here, what is the best venue for solving those? I think of workers' comp as one, and PERS certainly, especially Tier 1, I think demands attention. Do you have any thoughts on using the tail end of a special session, not gathering all the parties that are involved in the system together and trying to work out a solution, but kind of just rushing something? We had a bill on the floor yesterday that failed. Now we have amendments that are being drafted and moved. Is this the best process, based on your experience, for really doing some complex reform of a retirement system?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckard, you're right. I don't see this as the end of the process. I see this as the beginning. I think some of these reforms in here are needed. From my standpoint, I think they need to be done. Is this the last bill we're going to see? Is this the end of the last product? No. Those committees that are working will definitely take up some more issues that obviously need to be addressed, and we will see more bills next session. But I think with the demand on the budget right now, the demand on you as legislators to say, do something about PERS, I think this may be the time to get moving on it. Mm-hmm. Take the opportunity while you can.
Okay, more? Thanks, Joe.
Thanks.
Steve and David, come back up too, please. Okay, Steve, you've got a few comments you'd like to make before we ask you questions, I trust?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Delaney, legislative liaison for PERS. Let me first state that I am simply sharing concerns on the language. The PERS board obviously doesn't have any position being taken on the bill that's before us. Just kind of working my way through the bill, the first item I wanted to comment on was page 2, line 21. The employer representatives were asking if this committee could consider changing the 5-year call to a 10-year call. We would want to study the impact. I do not know, for instance, if Milliman USA, who is the private actuary that determines our employer rates, has already taken the 5-year call into consideration when setting rates, in looking down the line, seeing when they could bring in sufficient assets to fill up any holes. So I would caution that we would want to check with our actuary before we were able to give a recommendation one way or the other as to changing that from a 5-year to 10 years and calling and filling that deficit account. Additionally, I'd like to comment on lines 24 through 28, the portion being deleted. This was some very helpful language that came out through Senate Bill 134, a direction to the PERS board as to what to do with the gain loss reserve account, that account of funds being held aside to pay when accounts have not earned 8%, and having directive from the legislature to aim for a zero balance when the last Tier 1 member goes out the door was very helpful to the board, and it makes it unlikely that for a long time anyone would see anything other than the assumed rate being distributed to an individual account. What it does do is it was a safety valve to ensure that there was neither a deficit in the account nor an excess of earnings that had piled up into the account and were unable to be distributed when the final Tier 1 member went out the door. So I would just caution that directive from the legislature was very helpful, and we would want to think about the impact of removing this directive to the board and would want to be able to have an opportunity to speak further to that. Finally, on page 3, just a caution with regard to the earnings. Notice on lines 2 through 6, it directs that all earnings in excess of the assumed interest rate are to be paid to this deficit account. My caution there is that there are other directives from the legislature with regard to reserves and funding. ORS 238.610 says that PERS is to take its administrative fees off the top. ORS 670 sub 1 was a part of Senate Bill 134 that we changed with regard to the contingency reserve and gave the board the ability to set up a number of various contingency reserves, and one they've been looking into is a possible contingency reserve for member dollars to pay for charges or liabilities incurred by members themselves. This language would take away the ability of the board to fill those issues. Now, David and I have talked about that, and Mr. Hendricks had mentioned that he would be looking into some of these issues for possible amendment, but it was a concern I wanted to share. As far as taking away the board's ability to work with the various reserves already outlined within statute. Those were the initial comments I wanted to share with the committee. I'm available to answer questions you may have.
Okay. My first question would be, Pat said that the funding of the gain loss reserve comes entirely from employee money. And my understanding of the system is that the fund earnings fund the gain loss reserve, and that is the fund earnings are both employee and employer's money.
That is correct. The PERS board fills that fund from the fund earnings before distribution to accounts. So, in essence, both employer and employee dollars are used to fill that gain loss reserve. When we drew upon it to pay to member accounts of 8%, we drew the entire bucket, which was a combination of both employer and employee contributions, or earnings, rather.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Dave, if we are to do this, the changes you have in Section 4, and it goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decides that you can't do this, could we put a clause in that the section you're deleting in lines 24 through 28 on page 2 could be reinstated, or would that happen automatically, or?
Chair Beyer, Dave Hendricks, Deputy Legislative Counsel. No, and I don't, you really don't want to make it, there are delegation problems with making the operation or changes contingent upon what the courts eventually do. In looking at this, one of the reasons why I didn't add this to the expedited review provision is because I think it's fairly unlikely that anybody will know if they've been harmed by this change for many years. You'll remember the chair will remember my testimony probably back on Senate Bill 134 about funding of reserve accounts in the fund. Because one of the issues there always is we've always, our office has always had concern that overfunding of reserve accounts could create a problem. If you have a reserve account without where you state the purpose is to protect, to make sure there's enough money to pay the 8% guarantee, if the fund gets up someday to the point where it has more than it actually needs, and this was Steve's point too about the zero balance, that you have more than you need, then at that point, yes, you could have a problem. But at this point, as a practical matter, it looks like it's going to be a while before you would be facing that. But if you did get to that point where, in fact, there was an overfunding of the reserve, that can be an issue. I could not see how to reconcile lines 24 to 28 in Section 4 with the idea that all earnings in excess of 8%, minus perhaps some for the other contingency reserves and administrative funds, had to be paid to either the deficit or the reserves established to cover any future deficit, and that's why I took it out. It seemed to be, it's hard to understand how that sentence would work in conjunction with what is now in subsection 2.
Okay. A funding source for an unfunded liability for local government. That one has got me baffled. I know someone just said it. I don't remember.
Maria
said it. We've already got the bonding capability, so they can bond for their unfunded liability. I'm asking you publicly to put on your thinking cap and think about that and see if there's something. That one has me baffled. The 10-year versus 5 years issue, Steve. How soon could you ask the question you said you needed to ask?
Chair Beyer, within 24 hours, assuming that there's anyone at the
about
office.
12.
So I will try to track down our contact at Milliman USA, and I would assume that I could get it shortly.
That's all right. We're in no hurry to get out of here. We're just plodding along. Yeah.
Those are the questions that I had. Oh, yeah. And, Dave, also, I think someone said it too, or maybe you said it yourself, that we need to have language in here that we'd still use the contingency reserves.
Yes. Yeah. I think we need to have something making it clear we're talking about net earnings after payment of administration and other deposits to the reserves that are currently made before they ever make the decision on the 8%.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen, and everyone else for coming and showing some interest in this extremely boring subject. With that, we will close our public hearing, and the committee will stand at ease.